Hey there, Deep Diver. Ready for a deep dive into a legal case that's over 100 years old, but still making waves today?
Absolutely. Jacobson v. Massachusetts. It's basically the foundation of public health law in the U.S.
And it keeps popping up even in like recent cases about COVID restrictions.
Yeah.
So before we get too far ahead of ourselves, let's go back to the beginning. What exactly happened in Jacobson?
Okay, so imagine this. It's 1905, Cambridge, Massachusetts, smallpox outbreak happening, and the city's like, everybody's got to get vaccinated. And then there's Henning Jacobson, a pastor who's not a big fan of needles.
Yeah, his son had a bad reaction to a vaccine before.
Oh.
So I get why he was hesitant. Plus, back then, there was a $5 fine for refusing. That wasn't exactly chump change.
No, it wasn't. This
Yeah.
wasn't some theoretical thing for Jacobson. You know, there
Yes.
were real consequences.
But here's where it gets interesting. His refusal turned into this huge legal battle that went all the way to the Supreme Court, setting a precedent that we're still debating today. So we've got a pastor going up against the state.
Yeah.
Where does the Constitution fit into all this? Was the state even allowed to make people get vaccinated?
That's the big question. Jacobson argued that being forced to get vaccinated violated his personal freedom, his liberty under the 14th Amendment. You can think of the 14th Amendment as the safeguard. It says states can't just trample all over people's basic rights without due process, you know, life, liberty, property, that kind of thing.
Okay, so Jacobson's saying the state's overreaching. But didn't the state have a good reason to mandate vaccines? They were trying to protect everyone from smallpox.
Oh, absolutely. The state argued that they had police power, the authority to make laws to protect public health and safety. It's like having a set of tools they can use to keep people safe.
Yeah.
But Jacobson challenged whether they were using the right tool in this situation.
So individual freedom versus the state's power to protect its citizens. Classic constitutional clash. What happened next? Did the Supreme Court side with Jacobson and his individual rights?
Actually, no, they didn't. In a 7-2 decision, the court upheld the Massachusetts law. They said that individual liberty isn't absolute. It has to be balanced against the needs of society, especially when you're facing a public health crisis.
Right, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But doesn't that mean the government could just do whatever it wants if they say it's for public health? Did the court give him a blank check?
Not exactly. There were some limits. Justice Harlan, the guy who wrote the majority opinion, he basically asked, does the Constitution guarantee total control over your own body, even when it could put others at risk? It wasn't just about individual rights by themselves. It was about balancing those rights with the needs of everyone else.
Okay, so they acknowledged the state's power to protect public health, but they also said there have to be boundaries. How did they figure out where those boundaries were?
They came up with a three-part test to determine if the state's actions were justified, a way to figure out if they were going too far.
Like a test with multiple ch choice questions and everything.
Haha. More like a framework for analyzing the situation. The first part of the test. The law has to have a real and substantial connection to protecting public health. It can't just be some random rule they made up.
So it has to make sense. What else?
Second, the law can't be overly harsh or unreasonable. It has to be a proportionate response to the threat. You wouldn't use a sledgehammer to crack a walnut.
Right.
Yeah.
The punishment should fit the crime. Or in this case, the public health measure should fit the threat. What's the third part?
The third part is that the law has to be applied equally to everyone. No kicking and choosing who has to follow the rules.
Seems pretty straightforward. So, case closed. Did Jacobson solve all our legal dilemmas about public health and individual rights?
If only it were that simple. We have to remember, this is way back in 1905. They didn't have all the legal standards we have today, like strict scrutiny, which is a much higher bar for the government to clear when it comes to restricting fundamental rights.
Gotcha. So how did they decide what was reasonable back then? Did they have a specific definition or a formula they used?
Not really. They used a reasonableness framework, which honestly gave a lot of leeway to the state legislatures. Back then, they weren't so quick to question the decisions of elected officials, especially when it came to protecting public health.
So it sounds like the court was basically saying, hey, we trust you lawmakers to do what's best. But I'm guessing that approach has been challenged over the years, right? Especially with all the progress we've made in science, medicine, and our understanding of individual rights.
You're absolutely right. And that's where things get really interesting. Jacobson has been cited a ton of times, but some lower courts in 2021 actually pushed back. They said it was kind of outdated when you're talking about things like vaccine mandates. What they considered reasonable back in 1905 might not fly in the 21st century.
Well, hold on. So this big landmark case cited for over a century is suddenly outdated. What changed?
Well, the legal landscape has shifted. And now courts are grappling with whether Jacobson is still the right framework for these types of cases. So the big question is, how do we balance individual rights and public health in our modern world, especially considering everything we've learned since 1905?
That's a big question, and I'm definitely curious to hear more. But let's save that conversation for part two of our deep dive. Stay tuned, listeners, because we're just getting started. Welcome back, Deep Divers. We're picking up where we left off with Jacobson v. Massachusetts. This case, it's like a legal chameleon, always changing colors as courts try to figure out what it means for today's world.
Yeah, exactly. That's what makes it so interesting. It's not just some old document. It's a living piece of legal history that keeps sparking debate and forcing us to rethink the line between individual liberty and public health.
Right. We were talking about how some courts are saying Jacobson is outdated, but hasn't it been used to justify all sorts of public health measures over the years, like mask mandates and lockdowns?
Absolutely. Jacobson has been cited in tons of cases about public health measures, but that's exactly why it's so controversial. Some people say it gives the government too much power to restrict individual freedoms, and others say it's essential for protecting everyone.
So it's a double-edged sword. It can be used to justify things that are necessary, but also things that might be going too far. How do courts even figure out how to handle this? It seems like there's always something new to consider.
You got it. It's a constant balancing act. And courts have to weigh a lot of different factors. They look at how serious the health threat is, how effective the proposed measures are likely to be, and the potential impact on individual rights.
So if the health threat is really serious, like a pandemic, courts might be more likely to allow restrictions on individual freedoms.
That's generally what we see. But it's not just about how scary the threat is. It's also about whether the government's response is actually going to work. If what they're doing isn't likely to make a difference, then it might not be justified.
So it can't just be a reaction based on fear. It has to be a measured response based on evidence. But who gets to decide what evidence is good enough?
That's a great question. In the Jacobson case, the court didn't really get into the science behind the vaccination requirement. They kind of just took the state's word for it. But things are different now. We have a lot more scientific knowledge and experts who can give evidence-based recommendations. Courts are more likely to want to see that evidence before they'll uphold a law that restricts individual liberty.
Makes sense. We've come a long way since 1905 in terms of science. But what about public opinion? Does that play a role in how courts interpret Jacobson?
It's complicated. Back then, the court put a lot of emphasis on common belief. Basically, if most people believe something's true, the government can act on that belief even without strong scientific proof.
But isn't that a little dangerous? Especially now with all the misinformation out there. Should public health policies really be based on what's popular instead of what's scientifically sound?
It's a valid concern and something courts are always wrestling with. How do you balance respecting what people want with making sure laws are based on evidence and ethical principles?
Because what's popular isn't always right, and what's right isn't always popular. Speaking of historical context, didn't Jacobson come out the same year as another big case, Lochner v. New York? The one where the Supreme Court struck down a law about how many hours bakers could work.
You're right. It's interesting to compare those two cases. One upheld a law that restricted individual liberty for public health, and the other struck down a law that restricted economic freedom. Seems kind of contradictory.
It does. Why would the court be okay with restricting individual liberty for public health, but not for economic reasons? Were they just pro-vaccine back then?
I think it's more complicated than that. The Lochner era was the time when the court was really skeptical of the government regulating the economy. They saw it as interfering with individual freedom.
But they didn't seem to have the same problem with public health regulations, like the one in Jacobson. What was the difference? Was smallpox just a more immediate threat than tired bakers?
It might have had to do with the type of threat. A contagious disease like smallpox was a clear and present danger to the whole community. The court seemed to recognize that in those situations, individual liberty might have to take a backseat to keeping everyone safe.
So Jacobson was like an exception during the Lochner era. Like, the court was saying, we believe in individual freedom, but when it's a life or death situation, like a pandemic, the state has to protect its citizens, even if it means limiting some freedoms for a while.
Exactly. But that doesn't mean the government has unlimited power. The way courts interpret Jacobson has changed a lot since 1905, especially with administrative law becoming more important.
Hold on. What's administrative law and how does it connect to Jacobson?
It's basically the law that governs how administrative agencies operate, you know, like the CDC, the FDA. Back in Jacobson's time, it was mostly the state legislature making decisions. But now we have all these expert agencies that deal with public health issues.
So instead of just listening to the state legislature, courts now also take into account what these expert agencies recommend.
Exactly. Courts are more likely to ask, did the government follow the right steps? Did they talk to the right experts? Did they look at all the evidence? It's not just about whether the law is good or bad. It's about how the government came up with that law.
That's interesting. It's like we've added another layer of checks and balances. But doesn't that make everything even more complicated?
It does. And that's why, even though Jacobson is a really important case, we have to be careful about how we apply it today. It's a product of its time, and we can't just blindly use its principles for modern situations.
So it's not a one-size-fits-all solution. It's more like a framework for thinking about how individual liberty and public health work together. But knowing all this, how should we as everyday citizens approach news about public health measures and legal challenges to those measures?
That's a great question to end this part of our deep dive on. I'd say the most important thing is to stay informed, stay engaged, and be critical. Don't just take things at face value. Ask questions. Demand evidence. And remember that you have a voice. The law is a living thing, and it's shaped by the conversations we have as a society. We'll talk more about the impact of Jacobson and what it means for us today in the final part of our exploration, so stay tuned.
And we're back for the final part of our deep dive into Jacobson v. Massachusetts. We've been talking about how this case from 1905 still has a major impact on public health law today.
Yeah, it's amazing how this one case keeps coming up in legal battles about everything from mask mandates to vaccine requirements.
And through it all, one big theme keeps coming up, how to balance individual liberty with the need to protect the public good, especially when there's a crisis.
You hit the nail on the head. It's this constant push and pull. And as we face new challenges and learn more about science and individual rights, we're always having to figure out where that balance lies.
Exactly. And before we wrap up, I want to go back to something we touched on earlier, the role of the courts.
Ah, yes. The judiciary, always there to try and keep things fair when there's a clash between individual rights and what the government wants to do.
Back when Jacobson happened, courts were much more likely to just let the state legislatures handle public health.
Right. They pretty much gave them the benefit of the doubt.
But I have a feeling that's changed over the years. Courts seem a lot more willing now to step in and say, hold on, this law isn't constitutional, even if the law is meant to protect public health.
You're right. Things have definitely shifted. The idea of judicial deference that we talked about before, it's not as strong as it used to be. Courts today want the government to show them a really good reason before they'll allow a law that limits individual liberty, even if it's for public health reasons.
So the government can't just say, trust us, we know what we're doing. They have to prove it. And the courts are there to make sure they do.
Exactly. And this brings us to a really interesting development in legal thinking. Administrative law, remember Jacobson happened way before we had things like the CDC and the FDA, all those organizations that play such a big role in public health today.
Yeah, back then.
Yeah.
It was pretty much up to the state legislature to decide what to do. But now, we've got all these experts and agencies weighing in. How has that changed things?
It's made everything a lot more complex.
Yeah.
In Jacobson, the court basically just agreed with whatever the state legislature decided. But today, courts take a closer look. They'll ask things like, did the government do things the right way? Did they talk to the experts? Did they consider all the evidence? It's not just about whether the law is good or bad. It's about how the government made that law.
So it's like we've added another layer of checks and balances to the system.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, but also makes things even more complicated, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why, even though Jacobson is a landmark case, we have to be careful about how we apply it to situations today. It reflects the time it was decided in. And we can't just blindly use its principles for every situation we face now.
It's more like a framework for thinking about the relationship between individual liberty and public health, a starting point for the conversation. So Jacobson might be over 100 years old. But the questions it raised are still relevant today, maybe even more so now with all the advancements in science changing social norms and global pandemics. It reminds us that there are limits to individual freedom when it comes to protecting everyone's health and safety. But it also reminds us that we shouldn't limit those freedoms without thinking carefully about what it means for individual rights.
It all comes down to this. When individual freedoms clash with public health, there's no easy answer. It takes thoughtful debate, looking at the evidence, and being willing to change our laws as we learn more about science and society.
That's a great way to put it. Jacobson v. Massachusetts might be from the past, but it continues to shape how we approach public health law in the 21st century. It's a reminder that the balance between individual liberty and the well-being of the community is something we're always working on. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive, listeners. Keep those brains working. and we'll see you next time.